heal our self-esteem is we're going through the six qualities of an intentional creator. This is the sixth quality. We save it for last for a reason. Because so many of the issues impacting self-esteem we can deal with as we're going through quality one, connecting with people and mental rehearsal and physical creation, or mental creation, physical creation, and discipline and structure and finding joy in the journey. Each one of those items, we are, in fact, beginning to heal our self-esteem. So this is a great thing for us to know as we're going through this process, that we are already on the road to healing our self-esteem. And I'll take some issues and see if I can fine-tune them this evening to make this just a little bit richer and better to understand. Well, there are several causes to self-esteem challenges. I want to share a couple of them with you. This is the last chapter in the book. Oh, by the way, many of you should have received this week an email that is announcing the pre-launch to the book, Today I Begin a New Life, so you've had an opportunity to see that artwork. I was wondering, I don't have it on my computer, I'd show it to you right now. Very exciting. If you have any questions about the book or how to get the book, go to www.augmandino.com/begin, as in beginning a new life. So begin, augmandino.com/begin. We're making an offer for you to buy one book or buy 10. And if you buy 10, you get to participate with me in an 8-week coaching session where I'm going to take you through the book chapter by chapter, help you better understand the principles. So you buy 10 books, you keep one, you give 9 away, and the coaching's free. Just a wonderful opportunity for you to get that which you may need to kick off this new year in a magnificent way. So we have these qualities of an intentional creator. Let's go into self-esteem tonight. Our objective is to be real and to be genuine and to be authentic without the need to impress and pretend and feel shame and fear. That's the objective. What does that mean? Well, Dr. Hartman said, first of all, it's the most difficult task in our human existence. That's interesting. But he also called it the highest level of maturity. The highest level of maturity. So being real and genuine and authentic is the definition of the highest level of maturity. I always thought it had something to do with age. And I've learned as I'm getting older, it certainly doesn't have to do anything to do with age. It has to do with how comfortable we are with ourselves, in our life and in the world. Do we feel whole and complete, comfortable in our own skin? Real, genuine, and authentic. Let's dissect these words so that we can better understand them. Real is about relationships. Why does being real impact self-esteem? Well, there is a tendency in our world today to ask the question, why do I feel this way? Why do I feel this way? So I peel a layer of the onion. I still don't find the answer, so I peel another layer. Then I peel another layer, and I peel another layer, and we go into a very dark space trying to find an answer to a question that does not have an answer. The question we may want to ask, and I'll suggest tonight that we begin the process, is anyone else suffering from a similar wound? Now, if we're dragging this around in our sack, we're going to ask, why am I feeling this way, looking for answers for why I'm feeling this way? When we're being real, creating relationships, we're taking those experiences. Anyone else suffering a similar wound? Of course. We engrave it on our heart, and it becomes a reference point that we can use when we're connecting with another person. By owning it here, instead of dragging it in a sack, for those of you on the phone, I'm holding this right in front of my heart. By owning it here, I'm able to listen and hear things other people may not hear. I'm going to ask questions others may fail to ask because I have a reference point. The sadness which I have experienced has now helped me better understand what someone else is feeling. Now, what we know from our discussions is that everyone has a wall of resistance. And behind that wall, they are holding back, on average, in a non-adversarial relationship, 40% of their cooperation and productivity. until they feel valued, which means they feel understood. A person now feels understood. Walls come down, and that cooperation floods out to us. It washes over us. You can feel it. It's almost discernible. It's almost palpable. And it fills our cup. Fills, F-I-L-L-S, fills our cup to overflowing. We feel joyful. So that's the first source when we're being real. We're holding this here. We feel a sense of ownership. That helps us feel whole. It's part of our character. We're not trying to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something different. We've owned our clay. This is our experience. Now we serve another person. We get cooperation and productivity flooding back. And then we get to see the joy of someone else beginning to heal. And when we see that piece, there's finally purpose in our suffering. There's finally joy in our journey and much-needed healing in our souls. Real, when we're being real, creating relationships, there are so many elements, as I've just shared with you, that contribute to the healing of our self-esteem. So our objective is to be real. The second objective is to be genuine. Genuine comes from the root word genus. It's like a genie. You know, you have the genie in the bottle, and we rub the bottle, and the genie comes out and gives us our wishes. Well, the truth is every one of us has a genie inside of us. It's our gifts, our natural talents and abilities. We're going to want to embrace these talents and gifts so that we can unleash them in the service of others. If we show up in all of our gifts and talents, we're going to be even more capable of stepping into someone's world and creating that safe place. However, the most important piece, I think, for our discussion tonight is this. Remember when we talk about in physical creation that when we're procrastinating, we're really experiencing fear, we're holding back. Remember pretend, impress, shame, and fear, we're feeling fear. And when we're feeling fear, all of us is not present. We are holding back. It's like putting our foot on the gas pedal. Now when we all of a sudden jump in and take on the task, remember that? We jump in with both feet and we go, wow. That wasn't so hard. Wow, why did I wait so long? In that moment is perhaps for some the only time when they truly taste of their natural genius. How could we do it so quickly? How could we do it so well in such a short period of time when we didn't even think we could? Because our genius was unleashed. Now, some of you may have procrastinated doing school projects back in the day when you're in college or high school, and the term papers and the preparation for the final exam. And, you know, we turn it in, get a great grade, and, you know, we might be thinking if they really knew how little we actually did, you know. The truth isn't that, how little we did. The truth is what we could do in such a little amount of time or a short period of time when we truly showed up. Oh my goodness, can you imagine if this genius showed up all of the time, what would be possible? Oh my goodness, Og says, there's a flame that burns inside of me, passed down from generations uncounted, that's a constant irritation to my soul to be better than I am, and I will be. I will fan these flames of dissatisfaction and proclaim my uniqueness to the world. Let us embrace our genius. That means we're in action. We're acting on our inspirations. We've used our mind constructively. We received an inspired idea, an impression, and a solution to a challenge. We know that we're known. We trust and are trusted. We act on. We get to experience our genius. And then we get endowed with even more ability. People are put on our path who we can serve and who can serve us. Miracles unfold. Can you imagine? You finally get to meet you. No more doubt, no more shame, no more fear, no more impress and pretend. You get to meet you. That's why we teach being in action. Well, action isn't any fun without a vision, because the vision ignites our passion. Otherwise, action's just hard work. It's boring, mundane, repetitious, burdensome. We want to be in passion-driven, vision-driven, mission-driven work. So we use our mind constructively. Authentic. Anthosectic. This is a little bit of a complicated statement for us to fully embrace it. Because some of us, as teenagers, rebelled. I was a rebellious teenager. Prodigal son. Some of us have not stopped doing so. We rebel against that which we know, and we've justified it for a lifetime. This is not a religious discussion. This is about being authentic, which means being your true self, embracing your intrinsic goodness. I watched a show last night about an athlete who's being intrinsically good. The criticism was bizarre. Just bizarre. We're going to want to be, even if it's not popular, our very best self. The next piece, acting on our own moral authority. Can make up your own rules? No. That means we're going to choose to do the right thing for the right reason. Because we want to, and we get to, and we choose to. That's acting on our own moral authority. We're not going to be faithful to a companion because we have to, or should, or must. We're going to act on our own moral authority and treat that companion with great respect and love and fidelity because we want to. We get to, we choose to. It's our choice. We are choosing to. Real, genuine, authentic, which means I'm acting on my own free agency to do the right things for the right reason. I'm letting go of resistance and rebellion and resentment. Can you feel it? How glorious to choose to be a good person. That's being authentic. So real, genuine, and authentic. Now, Dr. Hart went on to say, without the need to pretend, impress, feel shame or fear. I was working on the last chapter in the book last week, and I decided to include a story. I hesitated, because I already told the story in the beginning of the book when I was my stuff. I'd accumulated and amassed millions of dollars. We lived in a beautiful home in Mount Helix, 4955 Alzada Drive. You can go by and look at it if you like. Beautiful porte cochere, swimming pool, tennis court, full-time housekeeper, gardener who kept the grounds perfect, 40-foot bluebird motorhome parked out there on the north side of that driveway, garage full of wonderful cars. I'd owned Ferraris and Corvettes, and I was on my ninth Mercedes. It was a great life. I wore a Rolex watch, and I wore it. If you're on the video, you can sign to see how I wore it so everybody could see it. Did you miss it? It's coming back again. And I do remember the day I got to the bottom of Mount Helix and I'm at the signal light and I realize I don't have my watch on my arm. It's 10 minutes down, 10 minutes back, 10 minutes back down again. Wow, it's 10 and 10. I'll be 20 minutes late for my meeting. Should I just go to the meeting? But I couldn't go to the meeting, not without my Rolex watch. I was my watch. I was my car. I was my house. I was my things. I was. Have, do, be. I'd worked on the have. If I could just have, then I could do, then I would be. Except for I was still empty. I was empty. I couldn't get enough stuff. I remember walking out of the house one day. And a friend's there to pick me up in his Ford automobile, and I actually have the thought, who will know that I drive a Mercedes if I'm sitting in the back seat of this car? I mean, that's so silly. And then I had my proud heart ripped out. I'm so grateful for that, so grateful. I tell the story of the last apartment complex that we built. I was the general contractor and the developer. My construction partner had split because the money was gone. We'd let everybody in the office go. We were out of money. We'd been living on credit cards and lines of credit to keep things going. We weren't paid for the last couple $100,000 on this project because it cost that much to correct problems, and the market was bad, the bank was upset, and the plumber was bankrupt. And the bottom building, the one lowest and closest to the street, the last two apartment apartments at the end of a sewer line were backing up. What do you do? I can't get mad at the inspector. Somehow in the backfill, a very critical fall somehow got disrupted. And it wasn't draining. Now, if you've ever seen a sewer pipe, you know, there's a fall, natural fall. When you connect to the sewer, that creates a siphon. It just sucks it right out. If there's just enough fall, like a quarter of an inch to a foot, it'll suck it out. But it wasn't happening. I couldn't afford to hire a $10 an hour helper. And I drove my Mercedes, and it's about to be repossessed. I'm going to be giving it back to the bank. I'm driving it up to this apartment complex. It takes an hour-long drive up to the construction site. Put on my rubber boots and my overalls, and I dig this trench. It's about 3 feet deep. It's 80 feet long, under sidewalks. I'm removing the bushes that we just planted, trying to save the flowers, you know, trying to save things. Finally got the trench dug, and I'm standing in this trench. And it was time to unhook the sewer line that was clogged in two apartments. I hardly need to tell you what it was like. I wrote in the book, it's like the Shawshank Redemption experience. You know, and I'm standing there ankle deep in human excrement. I start to weep. How did I get here? How did I get here? At millions of dollars. The housekeeper's gone now. The gardener's gone now. The bus is gone now. The car's about ready to be taken. My world is caved in. How did I get here? I was my stuff. There was nothing left of me. I was done, standing in this trench in human excrement, weeping. I start talking to myself. I didn't care who walked by. I didn't care if they heard me. I didn't care anymore. I was so done. Fixed the pipe. Did the backfill. It was really late. Washed off with a hose. Best I could. And headed home. And that night, I got home and showered. It wouldn't wash off. I climbed into bed. I still smelled awful. Ramona's sound asleep. I got up and walked in the closet. You can read about it. I had an experience that mirrored the one I had a dream about the previous year. And a loving God called the power of the universe, force of creation, you give it a name. For me, it was God graciously yanked my heart out, my proud heart, and gave me a heart transplant that night. And that began the journey of learning the very principles that we're sharing tonight and do every Tuesday night. It'd be 7 years later, I'd meet Og Mandino's material. And as I stated in the book, it was like Og just sauntered in like an old and trusted friend, as if he were saying, "Where have you been? I've been waiting for you, David." 3 years later, became the CEO of the Og Mandino Group. Well, things turned around. We started creating a great deal of revenue. We started paying back the $1 million. It didn't happen immediately. It was 5 or 6 years into this process. And it's time. It's time I can go buy a sports car. I love sports cars. So I went and bought Harrison Ford's Acura NSX. Now, if you've ever seen an NSX, it looks like a Ferrari, except for it doesn't break down every 12 miles. And it's like a giant go-kart on steroids. They only make 200 of them a year. They're handmade, beautiful car. And I drove that for a while, and then I sold it and got a red one with a tan interior, with a T-top. And I remember one day I was driving to the office, and it hit me. David, you are becoming your stuff again. Oh, no. I knew it was true. I just knew it was true. When I got to the office, we had these two old historic homes that we had refurbished. In the back of one was an old wooden garage, one-car garage. And I backed the car in, covered it with a car cover, locked the door, and walked away. That car stayed in that garage for 9 months. During that time, I drove a 1997 Honda Civic. We later gave to one of our children with a cracked windshield. Drove it for 9 months until I knew that I was no longer my stuff. Opened the garage, took off the cover. Of course, the battery was dead and needed to be jumped, which I did. And then I drove off in the car. Sold it later, got past that stage of life. You know, when only 16-year-olds are giving you the big thumbs up because it's really cool, you realize you're past that stage. It's time to move on to more adult things than fancy, fast sports cars. Maybe that'll offend someone. I hope not. Anyway, point is this. I want you to reflect tonight. What are you hanging on to? What are you hanging on to? Now, it could be things you currently have. And if you become your stuff, in today's economic world, this can become very painful. Because you could lose your identity by losing your house. Losing your watch. Losing your car. You could lose your identity. Second of all, if you've already lost those things, you can feel very lost. This is what happens when we impress and pretend and feel shame and fear. We're trying to impress. We're trying to take what we have, make it seem really great so we feel better about ourselves because we're feeling less than. We are not whole and complete. We're trying to fill the empty hole with stuff. I'm going to encourage you tonight just to take a look. Now, you don't have to put your life in a garage for 9 months, and that's not the point. And you don't have to go pawn your jewelry. That's not the point either. The point is, are you becoming your stuff? Are you the stuff you've lost? Just have that awakening tonight, if that's true. Awareness of this moment is probably the most significant portion, just to know, wow, I'm really embarrassed. I'm feeling less than. Now, pretend. Pretend's a little different, because we can pretend that we have things that we don't have. Act, you know, fake it till you make it kind of stuff. One of the great challenges I discovered in the last 5 years, we saw this coming, where in some businesses, people go to meetings and everybody looks okay. And so people wonder, am I the only one having a problem? Everybody looks okay. And we actually start to believe we're the only ones suffering. And when we're the only ones suffering, sometimes we'll spend money we don't have and go into debt, money we can't pay back, to keep that status quo. All of us are guilty of this to some extent, to try to keep the status quo because we don't want to let go. That's pretending. We see this when people go to civic or church kind of events and they look around, everybody looks okay. They're going, we're not going to have much of a Christmas. Wow, were you the only one struggling? Answer is no. But knowing that you're not the only one is just the beginning. It's that need to pretend to keep up that'll kill you. Shame. Shame comes from the root word sham. It's like putting a big wet blanket over us, like a pillow sham, just covering us, which is robbing us from all of us showing up, our genius. Our genius can't show up when we've covered it with shame. Shame, by its pure definition, is a little different than guilt. Guilt means I feel bad about what I've done. Shame means I feel bad about who I am. When we start to have that dialogue, that is so self-deprecating, that is so suffocating, that our natural genius has a hard time even peeking out a corner of the blanket. We're going to want to let go of shame. We're going to want to take that out of our sack. Let go of guilt and shame and anger and frustration and say, is anybody else suffering from a similar one? Anybody else been here? Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll put it here. And you watch people be put on your path who are or have struggled with what you struggle with but yet haven't put it on their heart. It's still weighing on them. It's still a huge burden. And by you hearing and asking empathetic questions, they can finally feel understood. This is so healing to a person. often answered with, isn't it nice to know God knows your name? That's how we get rid of shame. Now, if you're a Christian, you know where to put it. If you have another belief system, send it up to the power that governs the universe. Just give the shame to that power. It'll gladly take it. Now, the last one's fear. Now, this is the acronym from an unknown author. Fear is false evidence appearing real. It's when we have an expectation and it's unmet. We get that lightning bolt of cortisol in our body. Highly intuitive people, which is everybody on this phone, reads those feelings, that false evidence, and we feel that it's real. So we begin to act on that feeling, that intuitive feeling, based on how our body's feeling, based on the chemicals that have been released, based on the thought process. That's why we don't want to create expectations. We want to be very careful that we stay in mental creation. Vivid visualization to get inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to challenges. To ignite our passion, not escape and avoid fantasy, where we create those expectations that will absolutely be unmet every time. This is how we fight fear. We're not talking about rattlesnakes. We're not talking about abusive situations or threats to our life. These are threats to our expectations. We'd like life to be that way, and it keeps showing up like this. And we want to keep living up here, not down here. And the challenge is, if we don't go here to what's real and begin to build, we're going to continually be up here, boom, up here, drawn, just yank back, yank back, yank back. That is exhausting. Now let's go to what's real and let's begin the process of building. And that way we can eliminate fear in our life. We know that fear and love can't exist in the same place. That's love for others and love for ourselves. Well, our objective then, real relationships, genuine, embracing our genius, authentic, being our true, intrinsic, good self, because we want to. And not trying to impress or pretend or feel shame or fear. And when we are real and genuine, authentic, whole and complete, then we are exercising the highest level of maturity. Now, sometimes we do have challenges. I had some wonderful coaching sessions today. You know, sometimes it's a bad relationship. Someone was in a marriage for years, a couple decades, where the dialogue was just so awful. She left feeling less than, not enough. And it had been so long. Before that, it was 21 years with a stepfather, the same kind of a man. Oh, what a tragedy. Have that dialogue played out over and over again. And again, if we're in that space and we have that dialogue, let us ask, not why do I feel this way? Well, a stepfather was a jerk. I had a husband that was a jerk. That's why. That's not going to make me feel better. What's going to make us feel better is, again, saying, well, suffering from a similar wound and putting in our heart and showing up in the service of another person. We have these experiences that have conditioned us. If I said half the things to you that your thought processes say to you, could we be friends? And the answer is absolutely not. Sometimes we're not even friends with ourselves. And just know that the relationship with ourself is a mirror to the relationship we have with others. If we're having challenges there, we're probably having challenges here. So let us step back and get clear on who I am. I am, speaking of you, I am the observer. I am the observer. I can observe that I have a thought process that's very visual. That thought process is, I want to escape, it wants to escape and avoid life, so it goes into fantasy. Life shows up differently, it's frustrating, and I start beating myself up. Ooh, that's not healthy. I'm going to stop that. I'm going to start using my mind constructively. I'm the observer. I'm no longer going to have unmet expectations drive self-deprecating dialogue. I'm going to choose not to do that. Another one. Kevin and I were just talking about this one. Comparison. And he had a phrase for it that he used tonight. I'm just going to open my journal because I took copious notes while he was talking. He said, unfair comparison. This is when a woman, and they're most highly likely to do this, because the statistics tell us that 85% of women feel badly about how they look. 85%, that's amazing. Us old guys, sometimes I guess we don't care enough. But imagine, if we were a woman and we took the very best from 10 different women, we created Superwoman. I want you smiling while I'm doing this, okay? We take Superwoman, and then we compare our failings as we see them, our faults. Maybe it's our hair, maybe it's our body type, maybe it's our education, maybe it's the number of kids we have or don't have, or whether we're married or single, all that dialogue that we're having, we compare ourselves against them, and we're going to always be less than Superwoman. Now, you say, well, I don't do it that way. 92% of you look at a person, and you judge yourself, what you know about you, in comparison to what you see outwardly from the other person. 92%. That's crushing. Just crushing. It's going to be so important that we don't go into comparison games. This is the clay we've been given. Take this clay and create the most we can with it. Don't compare it with everybody else's clay. We will always fall short of what their clay looks like. We've never really been in their clay. And frankly, I have never seen somebody else's clay I'd really want. I'll take mine. Even in the worst hours, I'd still want mine. I'll take this challenge over theirs. I'll take my challenge. So we want to be able to say, this is my clay. Let's stop the comparison game. Because it can get really insidious. We can actually go, just be open to this for a moment. This is a little tough to hear. We may actually not just compare what's wrong with people and we feel bad. We may actually start, I mean, what's good with people and feel bad. All their strengths, all their, we might actually start noticing their weaknesses in an attempt to make us feel better about our situation. That's really a deadly comparison game. We don't want to play the comparison game. Brace and own your own clay. The other one is in terms of our belief systems. We're going to want to be true to our beliefs, that authentic message. I do a lot of assessment work, and it's very common for people to have a measurement where they're compromising what they know to be true, to somehow fit in, to belong. Because belonging is more important than being true to themselves. Tonight, let us make the decision. If we've been doing that, let us stop this. Let us be true to what we know to be true. I have no judgment about what that might be. Just be true to it. Don't give up your values, your ideas, your principles, your beliefs, just to fit into some arbitrary group of society. Be true to yourself. Again, whatever that belief is, be true. That's not a moralistic discussion. Just be true to your own beliefs. Now, where we get into challenges with this is when we start having one image we present to the world and another secret image that we live in this private place in our closet, so to speak. Alcohol addiction, drug addiction, eating disorders, even pornography addictions, that keep us from truly being able to be real, connecting with other people. And we ask, who am I? Am I the facade, or am I this despicable person? We're not either one of these. We're the observer. We're the observer. We're looking at this. We want to step back and go, wow, I don't like this. I don't want to be this anymore. I just want to be real. I want to be real. I want to be real, me. Genuine, authentic, the real me, whole and complete. The other cause is self-esteem. There's a fourth. It's a tender one. And sometimes this tender one requires some intervention by a licensed therapist. And I'm not. I'm a coach. And that's when we've had the fragile underpinnings of trust disturbed in a really awful relationship. can happen on our children. You know, I was put in the care of a pedophile from 2 to 4. That was not a good experience. That really rattled some foundational issues. It took the better part of my lifetime to sort out, put those building blocks back where they belonged. Some have been in bad relationships. Some have just been treated poorly, nurturing issues when they're growing up. There could be a lot of reasons to have trust. That's the key phrase, trust. The fragile underpinnings of trust damaged. We want to, instead of focusing on whether I trust, we're going to want to show up in that I serve. I listen. I ask questions. I create safe places for other people. And I create the trust. Instead of me needing it before, I actually create it in the action of connection. I create the trust. So those are the four primary causes. We've got unrealistic expectations, comparison games. We've got those challenges of addiction. And lastly, we've got these fragile underpinnings of trust that can be damaged. Well, what do we do? What do we do? Well, it's been my experience. And this is sensitive. I mentioned it early on, a little bit more detail now, that we want to go to some, what I'm calling a mental monastery of meditation, where we can be ourselves and just be with ourselves. I happen to believe in meditation and having a quiet soul. However, I believe in going there to get grounded, to know who I am, so that I can then go out and show up in the world real and genuine and authentic. We don't go to these places to escape. We come to get grounded, knowing who we are. Our focus is not trying to make the world like the mental monastery. The objective is to show up in the world more whole and complete. Because the world will never show up in that mental monastery. It's too complex. We're not going to do that. We'll spend a lifetime in frustration every time it shows up differently than our mental monastery of meditation. So again, I love stillness and meditation. But let it be a place where we quiet the noise, get grounded with who we are, and then go out into the world and take it on again. It's a risk when we go into these places and we start trying to peel away the onions and find the answer why. The answer to the why question is a booby prize. It never fills our soul. That hunger that's in our soul, it's never filled. It's like when we feel like a victim and we suck energy from everyone. Then we're resentful because they're not giving us more. When in fact we've taken every bit they have. They may look like they have more, but they're spending all their energy dragging their sack and trying to look okay. We have taken all they have and it's not enough. When we seek to be understood, when we seek to understand why we are feeling this way. I truly believe in the core of my being. The one way we heal the self-esteem and fill the cup to overflowing is truly when we focus on serving another, using our life experience as a resource. Because then it's got purpose. The purpose is in blessing another life. The joy is unspeakable. It's not like someone's writing you out a check and you deposit in your bank account. You can feel it. You know it. And it's like esteem itself. You can't buy it. You can't own enough stuff. It's an inner sense of knowing. It comes from a different place. Ultimately, when we're truly focused on serving other people, we're in partnership with that power that's greater than us. When we're using our mind constructively, we're receiving inspired ideas from that power that's greater than us. We're trusting. And being trusted. When we're in action, we're endowed with more ability, when we're fully using what we have. People are put on our path, unmistakably put on our path, who can serve us and who we can serve. Here's the bottom line. I believe one of the greatest sources of understanding who we truly are in all of our magnificence is to know and be known, to trust and be trusted, or we can have intellectual prowess. We can have degrees. We can have things. But so many with all of that are still spending time in therapy. Now, there's nothing wrong with therapy. I'm not talking about processing difficult situations, trying to get an answer to the question, why do I feel this way? The unanswerable question. The answer is found in the service of others, because it's in the service of others that we're in the partnership with the power when we receive the inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to challenges, where we know and are known. Trust and are trusted. Well, this week your assignment's really simple. First of all, I want you studying scroll number 4. Now, if you're on a sequence where you're studying the scrolls 3 times a day for 30 days, stay on that pattern. Any one of the scrolls will raise your awareness. You just want to have your awareness raised this week. Scroll 4, Nature's Greatest Miracle. Beautiful scroll. Let that scroll into your soul 3 times a day, or the scroll you're studying, and make this commitment. We'll be back to you before the holiday season is over. However, I think it would be wise if you made the decision to give the gift of being understood to 5 people. Who are they? You might all find all 5 in your immediate family. You might find some in your neighborhood, some in your business, some acquaintances, friends. Make the commitment tonight. I'm going to give the gift of being understood to 5 people. You'll know when you do it. You'll step into their world. You'll listen till you understand. You'll ask questions that demonstrate you do understand till they do. Create a safe place. Walls come down. You see it. The gift has been given. Make the commitment to give that gift, especially, not especially, but you might say, well, I don't have any money for presents this year. You can't buy this one. It's priceless. You can't go to a store and buy understanding and give it to somebody. This is you, real, genuine, authentic, whole and complete, comfortable in your own skin, showing up in the service of another human being till they feel understood. That's the gift you'll give. I'm going to encourage you to take on that assignment of giving the gift of understanding to 5 people while you're reading scroll number 4. And ask yourself this question. How do I feel? After walking away, how do I feel? Joyful? Wow. Inspired? Whole, complete? You begin to see where this comes from. May you find it. May you look where you can find it, and may you find it. And as you prepare for the holidays, may you have a glorious week. It's been so good to be with you again tonight. Now, next Tuesday, we're going to take on quality number 1, this very topic of connecting with another person. Perfect. So if you haven't got your 5, come back. Or you do it, you want to fine-tune it, make sure you're back here next Tuesday night. And let's take this one on, so that we can give the gift of understanding, the greatest gift you can give someone, especially right now in this time in our history. Scroll number 4. And thanks, everybody. And good night.
Hello? Anybody out there?